meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hello there. This is Father Tom Coyes. I'm coming to you on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. I hope you can get this transmission. As the gods would have it, there must be some evil spirits trying to trip me up here today, having trouble with my internet connection, and therefore I'm on my phone here. So let's see if we can pull off some brain-wrinkling Wednesday with my phone here. So let me try. What I'd like to start with is something that I've done, a topic I've talked with before, and then got to relate it to what is happening in the church today. The big main topic is the controversy over the old mass, and I want to give you some of my insights as a newbie. I'm somewhat of a newbie to the old mass. And that means from all my priesthood, some 36 years, I never got into the old mass recently, primarily because a lot of young people were asking for it. I certainly think the Holy Spirit is working through some of the young people, especially young people that seem to be more thirsty for God and for living correctly according to God. Almost all the young people that were saying that they experienced the old mass and liked the old mass were young people that were trying to stand against the forces of secularism, we'll say it that way, or the powers of moral relativism that are around us. So I had to listen to those voices, and so I started to learn the old mass, and I'm just going to say it's grown on me, and I want to ask. Yeah? There we go. That's the reward room, not the punishment. And we haven't used the punishment room in a while, but it's good that the reward room is there. I do want to thank. I want to thank the young people who are sensing something powerful in Catholic tradition. But in order to lead up to that, I do want to get to some of my personal thoughts and some of the controversies. I think I'm going to say it this way. I think I know what Pope Francis is afraid of. I think I sense that he's afraid of some legitimate problems, but I just like to say that I don't think he has to be afraid of what he's saying he's afraid of. There are problems, obviously, and his concern with unity in the church is only an opening of a door, and we have to go deeper into that, and that's why I think I want to open up today with a discussion on a topic I raised a couple weeks ago, and that is a connection between what we call in philosophy metaphysics, and what we call in the real regular world as morality. There's a connection between metaphysics and moral principles that is very challenging to appreciate. I, for one, mull over it, think about it, how to get this concept properly set in my mind and help you understand it. But be that as it may, I do think I can connect these two ideas of bad metaphysics, which leads to bad moral principles and a general sense of right and wrong, and the present difficulty, controversy over the old math. So if you remember a couple weeks ago, I shared an article by a very interesting priest, theologian, philosopher, historian by the name of Father Brian Milady. And Father Milady was criticizing one of the giants of the Vatican II era, one of the giant theologians. And is it just a coincidence that he comes from Germany? I don't think so. I think we're beginning to see some dots that can be connected here. Father Karl Rahner was one of the giants of the 60s and 70s, the Vatican II era. And I'll say he did some house cleaning to some extent, maybe helping us overcome, probably, I'll say it this way in the simplest manner, superstitions. I think in every culture and every nation, every era, Catholicism, as almost any other religions, is ripe in a certain sense, is open to certain forms of superstition. And and every now and then, us believers have to be called on account to not just put your faith too much in superstitions. When I was down in Mexico, in a very poor area, which you might call a third world, especially in third world areas where people are not much educated at all, have a few years to read and write, maybe not even that, superstition really abounds. You could see that in the cultures of the Native American Indians, obviously. Or maybe not so obviously, but if you study a lot of their practices and beliefs, it really comes down to putting divine powers into natural phenomenon or natural means that don't really have divine power. That's sort of a thumbnail definition of superstition. And so Karl Rahner, I think, sensed that. In other words, something like, oh, if you are not baptized, you're not going to heaven. If you are baptized, then you are going to heaven. So therefore, baptize yourself or anyone else, and they're assured of going to heaven. That has never been the Catholic teaching, but that's what it can develop into if you're not fully invested in trying to get to the heart and soul of the matter. Obviously, what I'm referring to, I don't want to say anything that baptism is necessary for salvation, but obviously what's missing in my little example there, the formulation, is that just being baptized doesn't negate the fact that one can do a mortal sin and you can lose the salvation offered to us.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah, that's a good brain wrinkling. So anyways, I'm gonna take it for granted that most of you listening have some sense of the value of some of the modern innovations, developments within Catholicism. there certainly are valuable points. Maybe that's not so obvious. Let me name a couple that I see, even though I count myself as someone who cherishes sacred tradition, consider myself a faithful Catholic, and loathe the kind of dissenting theology that is around us a lot. But a legitimate advancement, I will say, is the post-Vatican II idea that the church has to be run by not only the clerics and the sisters, but lay people as well. In other words, more lay involvement. Ironically, I think there were more lay people involved pre-Vatican II than there seems to be now. But nonetheless, Vatican II did try to emphasize the fact that lay people have to take greater stock in keeping the church healthy and growing the church. What was the problem, however, is that the primary means of getting lay people involved had to do with the sanctuary, the area around the altar. In other words, the post-Vatican II Catholics missed the greater call to be involved in society at large, to affect business, affect politics, affect the entertainment industry, and all that kind of things of the world that lay people can and should be more involved in, bring the faith into those areas. It too quickly, probably because it's easier to say if we have lots of lay people in the sanctuary, then we're following the dictates of Vatican II by saying more lay people are involved in the church. That's a bad way of looking at the development of Vatican II. As I say, maybe there were some moments of superstition, and what I'm thinking of one thing comes to our mind: good and wonderful church going ladies would often go to bingo and put a Blessed Mother statue on the table where their bingo cards were, because Blessed Mother was going to help them win the bingo. Elephants were often put on the bingo tables as well. I'm not exactly sure why elephants are associated with good luck, but they are. So that kind of superstitious attitude about the saints intervening certainly needed some innovation and development. I also think that having more accessibility to the Bible on the part of everyone, both priests and lay people, was definitely a good innovation from the Second Vatican Council, that the readings would be heard in the vernacular. Definitely good. I'm going to jump ahead of myself here a little bit, but since I brought it up, that's one of the criticisms of Vatican of the old Mass, is that so much is in Latin, even in the readings. However, most Tridentine Masses, after one reads the reading in Latin, you again hear it in English, or your own language, of course. But even that being said, people in the pews following the Mass read the readings. And the old adage, the book is better than the movie, I think kicks in when we consider the virtue of the TLM, namely that reading the prayers will oftentimes affect you. You'll appreciate them. You'll get greater insights. If you're reading the readings in a book while the priest is reading them, either in Latin or in English, and more so than just listening, what is usually the case today, right? So, in other words, there are some legitimate, I can't put myself in the camp that says Vatican II was illegitimate, and I think that's one of Pope Francis's fears. I think that's one of many priests and many bishops' fears. We don't want to just high and dry say all that theology, advancement, etc., was bad, right? So, but still, it can go overboard, and it so often does happen. I think it has gone overboard, and so like I say, the fears that Pope Francis seems to have in seeing the TLM grow or be appreciated more, I just got to say, I don't think are accurate. So anyways, that's as an introduction. I'll try to come back here again. I apologize once again for the perhaps not as clear transmission here. My crazy internet seems to be down, so we're punting. We're going this way. Hang in there, and I promise you, I want to try to make something very challenging, very difficult, at least seem somewhat understandable, and that is how to hold on to good metaphysics in order to discover and hold on to good morality, which leads and underpins good liturgy. Bad metaphysics, bad moral principles, bad liturgy. And if I can make that connection, I'll be happy. And I hope you will be too. Anyways, well, you are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Koska Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Koska is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Koska is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
Hello. Hey, this is Father Kois here again. I can't hear the music. Oh, I feel just terrible, my friends. Let me try to continue here. I hope Nick, I'm okay. I want to try to make a connection here. I'm trying to make a connection between good metaphysics, bad metaphysics, good morality, bad morality, good liturgy, and bad liturgy. All right? So, and this leads to the controversy behind, I truly believe, this great debate about liturgy. as I put the three topics, metaphysics, morality, and liturgy, in order, liturgy, of course, comes to the end, in the third position, and we have to start with metaphysics, build a morality, and then see how, and then let the liturgy do its job, started, of course, by Jesus Christ, who had, we got to believe Jesus had good metaphysics, we got to believe Jesus had good morality, and though he didn't set out as detailed of a list of the kind of liturgy he wanted, but that flowed from the Last Supper, of course. And I think our Lord was assuming that the liturgy that would flow from the Last Supper would maintain all the wonderful points of liturgy that were part of Old Testament liturgy. Catholic liturgy is very much rooted in Old Testament liturgy. And so in order to appreciate the fullness of the right kind of liturgy, we have to see that there were some things abrogated by Christ in the New Covenant, but not everything. Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind that was abrogated by the New Covenant was the animal sacrifices, right? Animal sacrifices were huge, were pivotal in the Old Testament liturgies. And of course, Jesus, by offering his own life, he became the Paschal Lamb. His sacrifice, his death, abrogated, we'll use that word because it's a word popular today, abrogated the Old Testament sacrifices. So let's do a quick little analysis here. Good metaphysics versus bad metaphysics. It's the way we think about reality, existence, and obviously bad metaphysics would be more like fantasy. What's real is what you can fantasize about. Now, everybody knows that we can fantasize about unicorns and the fact that cows can jump over the moon. But obviously that would be unrealistic, and we would call that bad metaphysics. We're not appreciating what is truly real. What is the notion of a being that is going to guide our sense of what's right and wrong has got to be true being. It can't be fake. It can't be a fantasy. It can't be a made up, as it were. And so we need a metaphysics. We need a sense of reality that we can call correct. We could say it is true. And obviously, what is not always just what is seen or touched or bumped into, right? We all know that there are things that are real that are not just physical real. One of the great mistakes of modern metaphysics is to negate or deny the fact that there are real beings that are not physical beings. The great mistake of modern science and modern thought is that the only real being are physical beings. We discover new physical beings all the time in science and medicine and astronomy and all the rest, of course. But that still doesn't change the fact that things that are may not be made out of atoms. And of course, that's how we would have to make way for an idea of God, how we would make way for the idea of a soul, right? Our sense of being in this world, when we try to build up a sense of what's right and what's wrong, it can't be based on our fantasies of what is or what isn't. to take a crazy analogy, maybe a little bit further, if you're talking about what is right, and you're going to say, it is right for me to jump off a cliff because I want to fly over the valley, obviously that would be bad advice. Or if you were to push someone off a cliff, or any way you shoot or do violence or kill somebody, that is depriving the person of existence. It's depriving the person of their being a human being in this world. We could say that the injunction, do not kill, is connected to the good metaphysics of do no things that will deprive a person of their human being, their being a human in this world, or to help a person be more of a human being. Obviously, there's so many aspects of being a human being. If I'm going to help a person learn how to run or walk like parents do with children, or teach them knowledge about the world around them, they're affecting their mind is made for ideas, and as your ideas are rooted in your mind, you are doing a good thing. You are giving your mind and your thoughts better understanding of what's real. Your mind craves for truth, and your mind may play with the ideas of fantasies. We all enjoy a good science fiction movie or something of the sort. Aesop's Fable, where dogs and animals of all sorts talk to each other, right? But we know that that's not the real aspect of reality that they're conveying. They're not, those fables are good, not because they're describing real animals talking, but the lessons that are learned are part of the advancement of our human being, things that help us thrive and don't tear us down, as it were. So that's one way to start this connection between metaphysics and morality. Another way.
Wow. You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Hey, oh, very good. Nick, I did hear that little, wow, you wrinkled my brain. I did not hear the commercials when we were on commercial break. So if you're able to play something like that, that'll let me know the commercials are over with. Anyways, I apologize once again, friends. But anyways, this is so important. I'm glad you're sticking with me here, because if you could see this connection between good metaphysics and good morality and good liturgy, it's a powerful, it's a Catholic way of looking at reality, really. And a Catholic way of looking at reality says it's real for everyone. Obviously, remember the word Catholic means universal. And if I, as a Catholic, have a view that being a human being involves certain characteristics, certain abilities. It's not just because I'm a Catholic, or just because it's me saying it, or just because my God taught me that. It's because I truly believe it is real. It's true. Like G.K. Chesterton said after his conversion, he says, going back to not being a Catholic was just unthinkable, because it was like being told there was such a thing as an elephant, which is a strange animal to a person growing up in a big city like London, let's say, who never saw an elephant. But if you were told that there's this huge animal with big floppy ears and a nose that's 7 feet long, et cetera, legs like tree trunks, you would doubt the person telling you. Say, that's too reality. I'm going to doubt that. And then you eventually see an elephant, or you ride on an elephant, and you see the description was exactly right. You can't go back to thinking that an elephant is just someone's fantasy. That's kind of the reaction that a convert has when they discover the fullness of Catholic truth. They're especially when we're thinking, oh yes, there's a heaven, oh yes, there's a hell. God will be the judge of who would go to either. So you take greater stock in following what is right and what is wrong. In order to get a little bit different sense of the connection between good metaphysics and good morality, I like the example, which I learned a long time ago in philosophy class from one of my great philosophy teachers, a good Catholic priest, actually, Father Ron Lawler, one of my favorite teachers in my seminary days. But anyways, he often used the example of a violin, you know, maybe because I started to learn the violin when I was little. And we all know that there are some really expensive violins, but even the small violin that a child would get in seventh grade in order to start learning how to play is a beautiful piece of wood. It's a musical instrument, and part of its being, here's the connection to metaphysics, part of its being has to do with its function, with its ability to make music, right? And you may analyze a violin, even the most expensive, or let's say especially the most expensive, you can analyze it according to its physical being, and what would you come up with? You would come up with wood of a certain shape, and it wouldn't necessarily bring you the idea of music, let alone beautiful music, unless you began to see that piece of wood in a specific shape being used by a violinist with a bow and all the rest. And so the sense of the violin's goodness is attached to something that's not just its physical being. And we would roughly call that its function, its usefulness, or its action, or what it can be used for. The meaning of that piece of wood is much more than a nice piece of wood in a certain shape, and you can't really put music under a microscope like you can a piece of wood, but we all know it's real. And so there's this metaphysical side, there's this being side of a violin that can't be described as just the wood. Are you following me? So the example that I think really helps me appreciate this connection between good morality and good metaphysics, and we have to lead to good liturgy. I'm going to get to that. So you don't use a violin for a doorstop, or you wouldn't want to use a violin for nailing a little you're trying to hang a beautiful picture on your wall, and you don't have a hammer, but you have a violin handy. And the violin's wood is pretty strong, and your wall is kind of weak, so you think you could use the violin to hammer the nail into the wall to hang your picture. It's obvious, it's easy to see how that would be wrong, that would be immoral in a very real sense, especially if it wasn't your violin and you were ruining someone else's violin.
Wow.
Why?
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Oh, very good. Hey, Nick, well, that could be a good sign for us to take another break then, right? I'm going to try to make this connection between good metaphysics and good morality with good liturgy. and how bad metaphysics leads to bad morality, leads to bad liturgy. All right? So let's take a quick break. I'm Father Tom Coyce, filling in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to Listener Supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
New from EWTN Publishing, Living the Scriptures by Mother Angelica is a collection of some of Mother Angelica's best on-air presentations and extemporaneous meditations. You will discover that Scripture is not a complicated puzzle meant for pensive biblical scholars, but a divine guide for our everyday spiritual life. And The House Was Filled with the Fragrance of the Perfume by Cardinal Fernando Filoni, the Grand Master of the Equestrian Order of the Holy Sepulchre of Jerusalem, reflects on the life, the beliefs, the values, and the choices for a knight and a dame. Living the Scriptures and The House Was Filled with the Fragrance of the Perfume. Available now at EWTNRC.com. By Catholic, shop EWTNRC.com.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyce here again, trying to wrinkle your brain. I'm certainly wrinkling mine, and I'm trying to make something very complicated a little bit more understandable to see how important three aspects of Catholic thought need to be put together. That is, when we say good metaphysics, and therefore it produces good morality, and good liturgy has to support good morality. So I was talking about the violin before the break, and I want to get this clear in your mind. A violin, obviously, if we're talking metaphysically, what metaphysical properties does a violin have? We're not talking about its mahogany or maple or any other kind of property of wood, right? Those are the physical properties of the violin. What are the metaphysical properties of the violin have to do, as everything to do with the sound of music? A great violinist and even a poor lover of violin music will be able to tell you that sounds beautiful, that doesn't sound nice. So we got that. But I was trying to say how you would come to a moral decision that doing this action, namely using the violin as a hammer to hammer in a nail so you can hang your picture on your wall, would be immoral. Why? Because it's not the action is hurting the thing's being. It's hurting the thing's purpose for living. And it's not only hurting its purpose for its existence, but it's also hurting its its physical existence too. If you do it long enough, it will be destroyed. If you hammer in too many nails, the violin will be destroyed. So now let's apply that to one of the great controversies, moral controversies of today. And then I could lead somehow to the liturgical questions, and especially why I think Pope Francis should not be afraid of what the traditional Mass is doing for many people in church today. I'm afraid that he doesn't get this connection that I'm trying to say today, and that's why he's coming up with a strange or an odd attack of something that's been very much a part of Catholicism for hundreds of years, right? So the connection between the violin and the issue of artificial contraception, right? One of the more sticky, one of the more difficult moral issues today. By and large, kids grow up being taught by not only more liberal or secular teachers in schools, especially public schools, they get it straight on that it is their responsibility to use artificial contraception. As soon as they start passing puberty, the adults in their lives are going to assume they're going to start having relations with people of the other opposite sex. And now it's almost assumed that they have to be ready for relationships with people of the same sex. Though in that kind of action, human action, you don't even have to bring up the issue of artificial contraception, obviously, because there's no conception in homosexual relations. So how does the church come to the conclusion that artificial contraception is a moral evil? It's connected to this idea of the metaphysical aspect of our bodily deeds, our bodily actions, and that the creation, in other words, the creation of new life is the creation of more human being. Do you get it? A man and a woman have a child, and there's more human being in the world today after they have their child. Obviously, there's one dad and one mom, and then after the child comes, there's three persons. So, human being is promoted, kind of like the analogy limps here a little bit, but kind of like the violin starts to play one song and then another. The more beautiful music the violin produces, the more its being is being actualized. That's another one of those philosophical words that we need to hold on to. Being is actualized. We have potential being, and then there's actual being. And we want to base our moral right and wrong on actions that bring potential being to the fullness of the kind of being that the thing is made for and made of, and not going to destroy other being. I think of the difference between having a child on the one hand that's following the being of man and woman, but some things can be created like a bomb, and or TNT might be a good example, which is what basically most bombs have been made of, except for the nuclear era. But actually, TNT was invented for good purposes, namely blowing holes up in mountainsides so that you could put a tunnel and people could drive cars or trains through the tunnel. TNT was first invented to help construction, and it's a very good thing. But then, of course, it can be used to destroy human being as well. So the improper use of TNT is limiting, destroying, taking away from being in the world. The proper use of TNT, putting a hole in a mountainside so you can build a tunnel, is improving human being in the sense that when you have when you want to get from point A to point B, and it only takes 10 minutes to go this route because there's a tunnel, or this, or you got to go an hour and a half around the mountain, you realize that you are able to accentuate, bring more potential into your life, had not the TNT been used for building the tunnel. Okay, so now here's the point that Rahner makes that this Father Milady, I think, really hits it, nails it on the head of the nail. To keep my nail analogy alive, he says that what Vatican II brought in, or what the modern society brought in, was the realization that what is needed is a formal existential ethics. Formal existential ethics. And the ethics, we know what that word kind of means, the science of saying what's right and what's wrong. And existential, as a, meaning rooted in true being, right? The true, you can have all sorts of fantastical moral principles if you're just writing a novel. But if you're going to stay with real being and not fantasize about reality, then your ethics are going to be rooted in that sense of being. And the third word that Rahner uses, formal existential ethics, that's what gets him into trouble, because he's saying the formal existential ethics is like, now when we use the word formal, my friends, we have to completely forget about what the normal modern day English definition of the word form means. If I use the word form for almost anybody, they'll think of a piece of paper that you usually get when you have to fill out something, right? A form is a piece of paper you fill out when you're registering or you're buying something. Or actually today you can have digital forms, right? When you're filling things out. But that is not at all what we mean philosophically when we say form. The form is the essence, the nature of the thing. And Karl Rahner was bringing back the Platonic understanding of the connection between the definition or the nature of a thing as its form, but it only exists in a non-incarnated form. You know, I think that word incarnation will help us here, because you could say, it's a, going back to my elephant, the elephant, the form of the elephant is the only true elephant that exists. The elephants that we see walking around in Africa or in a zoo aren't fully real as the form of elephant is in our minds or somewhere in a different kind of world, not the physical world we bump into. And so Rahner is playing with that Platonic word, formal existential ethics, and saying that that's the only place you can get truth in ethics. And the big mistake is then what's opposite or what's formal existential ethics in contrast to? That's where he says the individual act, all human acts are by nature individual and therefore unique. And therefore you can't get to a true right or wrong description of this act here and now. So because this act here and now, even if it is, let us say, rape on the most radical bad side of the sexual ethics question, or the use of artificial contraception, even between a husband and wife. That's not so shocking, but the church, we do say that that is wrong. And obviously by so many different degrees, and there, but still, since that act is something that happens in the here and now, and that by definition is not part of the formal existential ethics, you're never going to get an objective truth, a truth that's always right, or a statement that this action is always right or this action is always wrong. Okay, well, Nick, I think we should sneak in our last break here, if that's all possible. And then let me try to bring in that issue of the Tridentine Mass and why I think Pope Francis really should not be afraid of what he's afraid of. And it's connected to this, the issue of proper morals with proper metaphysics, okay? I'm Father Tom Coors. You are listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Here's some good news. We are pleased to announce that St. Stanislaus Kostka is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in answer to our Blessed Mother's call to open the doors. The Blessed Sacrament will again be exposed all day, every day, except when Masses or other services are being held. You are invited to come and pray anytime, day or night. For your safety, we ask that you practice social distancing and wear a mask. Hand sanitizer is available, and St. Stan's has increased cleaning and sanitizing of the church, and a security person will be on site. More information can be found at ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. It's not too late to register for the 2021-2022 school year at St. Stan's. Seats are limited. For more information or to schedule a tour, call 773-278-4560.
773-278-4560. And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stan's needs your help. We are forming a group of volunteers called St. Stan's Cares to help parish and school families in times of need. To join the group or learn more, please contact Brian at 312-343-3222, and we will plan an upcoming virtual meeting to discuss the details. Almsgiving, it's one of the three pillars of Lent. Volunteer with St. Stan's Cares as a means of almsgiving.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Once again, I apologize about this crazy thing called computers and internet, right? It's such a powerful, in going to my philosophical description about metaphysics and ethics, you know, we know that the invention of all these gadgets and all these computers and everything have been, we will say that they are good because they allow us to increase our ability to be human, and not just that we will have more. They allow us to have more human being, in the sense that being human involves communicating with people, involves knowledge and increasing our knowledge, right? Those two basic things, and computers are all about that. And so we can say that we love computers and we're glad they're here because they increase our ability to be human. But they have this negative side, which throws us to a loop quite often when they destroy our peace of mind and thwart our plans. So let me try to wrap this up by saying what I think the Pope is fearful of. Number one, he said in his letter that there should be one form of the liturgy. in order to produce unity in body, which we call the church, the body of people we call the church, and he rightly wants to increase that unity, and he wants to rightly protect us from the disunity that decreases the being of the church. Are you following me? But the old Mass, the Tridentine Mass, helps us be Catholic because it's helping us to be a Catholic plugged into the church that is 2,000 years old. You're not really a good Catholic if you're plugged into the church that's only the contemporary church. To be a good Catholic, you need to sense that you belong to an organization that's 2,000 years old, because we have to believe it was begun by Jesus Christ and not any great saint, even if they are a great saint, they didn't start the church. And so that's one aspect. And when he says there should be only one form of the liturgy, I could easily agree with him, but disagree with him when he says that the Tridentine Mass has a different form than the Novus Ordo Mass. The essence of the both Masses is the same. The accidents are different. Pope Francis seems to be exhibiting a poor understanding of the distinction between form and matter, or essence and accidents, substance and accidents. And so we need to see that they are so unified in that. In the argument, we can argue about what accidents are better, just like we can argue what we think a better song is at a Mass. But then, even more to the point, the Tridentine Mass focuses on this supernatural reality about heaven, and that our moral life is a preparation for the life that we're going to have in heaven. There's too much, and I'm just going to paint with a broad brush here, but there's been too much of an infiltration of a sense of moral relativity that's accepted. I really don't think it's the fault of the Novus Ordo Mass, but it's certainly the acceptance of the moral relativity has come in with gangbusters since Vatican II. So some of the young people who are attracted to the Tridentine Mass are also attracted to a traditional sense of right and wrong. So that will only help build up the body of Christ, right? Anyway, God bless you for listening today, and I do pray we'll get this little situation fixed for next Wednesday. But God bless you for listening. I am Father Tom Corey. You have been listening to Listener Supported, The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deep for truth or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now.